Long ago, at the end of the last great B-movie, there arose in the North a powerful new discussion group. Its ambition was to extend its reach until everyone watched Ralph Bakshi's Fire and Ice and listened to...
B-Movie Mania!
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to B-Movie Mania, where we're going to discuss Ralph Bakshi's Fire and Ice. And with me tonight, as always, are Jay.
Hello.
Mike.
Good night, everyone.
And an animated version of Paul's butt.
Good day.
So, Fire Wait. And Ice. Are you want to say hello now, Mike?
Mike doesn't
No,
exist.
I didn't hear you say it.
Mike has been having problems all day. So, for anyone who's not familiar with this...
No, Mike still didn't introduce himself, just FYI.
We're done with Mike. Mike is not allowed to say anything until the end.
Just introduce me.
All right, again. Mike. He saved up all day for that one. Thanks, Mike. So, yeah, Fire and Ice, sword and sorcery animation from 1983 by the great Ralph Bakshi. Bakshi? I don't know how
he
you
did,
pronounce
that. He did Lord of the Rings?
He did Lord of the Rings, way before Peter Jackson.
He did
Jackson.
Fritz the Cat.
He did do Fritz the Cat. X-rated animation.
Yeah.
And for our international listeners, that would be Fuego y Hielo.
Oh. Thank you.
Oh, boy.
It doesn't matter if you don't live in Mexico. If you live in Russia, it's still...
Fuego y Hielo.
Yes.
Fuego y Hielo.
Sounds like a breakfast. Like waffles. Mm. Anyway, much like Fritz the Cat, Fire and Ice is a sword and sorcery adventure.
Now, I love when Fritz the Cat pulled a sword out of his trench coat and chopped the head off of his abusive wife. Yeah, that was great.
You know, the whole famous, you know, Fritz the Cat, what is best in life sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hey, so I found this on Amazon Prime. Paul, didn't you say you found it on Hulu?
I checked on Amazon Prime and it said it wasn't available in my area for whatever reason.
That's weird because Chris and I think, both watched it on Amazon Prime.
Right? I did Amazon too. But it didn't have the right cover, right? It was just a generic cover.
Yeah, it's just
on
like
Amazon.
A black cover with the words fire and ice. So if you if Paul can't read, maybe that was the issue?
No. Hey, what we're getting at, this is not an attack on Paul. This is it's on multiple streaming services. Yeah. So if you're listening, you can listen to it, watch it on Hulu or on Amazon. Am I right?
Positive spin, Mike.
Yeah.
I think there are two different copies on YouTube also. So
just in case our international listeners aren't aware, I live in a different part of the country than everybody else.
But we're in the same room right now.
Right.
We fly. Yeah. We fly Paul in for every episode. Every couple of weeks. Yeah. Yeah.
This is going to be a burpy one, guys.
I'm feeling it. Kind of like the evil Ice Lord Necron.
Yes, he was quite burpy.
He decides to conquer the Earth with his burps.
You really have to blame the parents on this one, because when you name a child Necron, of course he's going to grow up to be an asshole.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. He is going to destroy everything.
I thought the opening sequence with Necron really set the tone.
God damn it, no!
He's got, like, so much power, and he's just... Let's just face it, he's ejaculating glaciers everywhere.
There is no way that's not what that was supposed to be. There's no possible
everywhere.
Way.
Everywhere.
His face He's moaning. He's cringing his face. He's just getting excited, and it just keeps splooging out of the tops of mountains.
Now, when I read up on this, so we all know, but I don't think the viewers know necessarily that the this movie was rotoscoped, which means it was filmed with live action actors, and then the animation was drawn over that stuff onto the cells. And so when Necron is ejaculating all this ice, that was actually some hardcore porn going on.
Nice.
You know, I never thought of it, but yeah.
I'm going to die.
Wow.
I just made that
up.
That's
weird.
But I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, fuck.
So the evil Ice Lord Necron and his mother Juliana, I guess they seek to conquer the known world, which is apparently, what, 10 miles apart or something? I don't know. I never got a sense that he's trying to destroy Firekeep with his ice, which I guess if you're going to put out a fire, use ice. They're like 10 miles away, right?
It becomes very apparent that it's not very far. Like, it seems like it's really close because there's, like, these walls of ice that apparently he's, like, spreading. Like, he's building, I don't know, he's coming this ice everywhere. And then there's, like, a plane. They mention a great plane, though I think that gets covered. And then there's a jungle, fucking Firekeep. And at the end of the movie, when like, the lava comes out, and, like, so it's basically, lava is what?
Wait, let's not even get to the lava till the end, because lava isn't even mentioned in the movie till, like, 10 minutes before the end.
No, all I want to say is that lava seems to go doesn't have to go far to hit that ice. Like, it doesn't do much.
I'd like to see a map of the fire and ice world.
Yeah, you got plains, jungle, oceans, volcanoes, all within the space of, like, you know, 10 miles or so.
I bet that map is, like, the guy who drew it out was showing someone. He's like, see, this is the jungle. This is the plain. This is the ocean. Wait a minute. I thought that was the jungle. No, it's blue-green, so it's both the jungle and the ocean. It'll make sense in the movie. Like, nothing makes sense.
No, nothing made sense in the movie. The world building was kept to a bare minimum. It's like, we're going to show, how about a jungle chase? How about a
bare ass minimum?
You're not going to believe this, but I just Googled fire and ice map.
Uh-oh.
And I have in front of me an interactive Game of Thrones map.
Oh, no kidding.
Well, this is George Martin, right? Didn't he do all this?
Yeah, this was his rough draft.
Yeah, I think Game of Thrones is based on fire and ice, is it not?
Yeah, the King of Winter ejaculating his glaciers.
Yeah, cool. Winter's coming, right?
There we go.
What if George R.R. Martin had watched this, right? And he's just like, that's a funny joke. And then decides to write a book just about that joke. Winter is coming. Literally, it's about
winter
coming. Winter
is coming.
All right. See, we've probably beat that one into the ground.
Winter is coming.
Yeah.
It's going to be a pretty short episode.
Oh, fuck. We'll do this joke 5 more times and then turn it off.
It's over. So Necron sends his some emissaries on to make peace with the Fire Keep. He's threatening them with his ejaculated glaciers, and he goes to make peace with the
Winter
king.
Is coming.
And then to help ensure that winter continues to come, he kidnaps the Princess Tigra. And let me tell you something. This movie is not a bastion of women's rights. Or there's you could easily read some racism into this too with the ape men.
I wasn't sure if we were supposed to talk about that.
It's pretty bad.
It veers that way, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, it's okay, so there's these subhumans, they call him, this race of subhumans who are subservient to the ice people, or the ice lord, who is the whitest guy ever. And they all look like, for the most part, they all look like Neanderthals. So you're like, fine, they're doing a caveman thing. Okay, they have darker skin tone. But once or twice, one of those guys pops out there, and you're like, I'm pretty sure he's on the Clippers. What the fuck?
What?
Like, it was bad.
Not a movie if you're easily offended.
There's this really weird thing. Guys, I'm going to send it to you over the chat right now. Because there was this weird, like, subhuman at some point when they're going into the ice castle. They're bringing Tigra in there, but other people have snuck in. And
oh, God.
And there's this subhuman with a woman's head on his head, and on her head is carved the Bat logo, the Batman symbol logo.
Oh.
100%. There's no way that's not what that is.
It is totally
the Bat symbol.
Baffled. I don't understand. That's an Easter egg or something, right? Like, why would that be there? That is what I saw that and went rewind. No, it is. We're posting this. We're posting this picture on the site because this is so weird that it's that.
Although I will say one thing I did enjoy about the movie is one thing that fire and ice can agree upon is just don't even wear pants. Just don't wear. I don't care if you're in the hottest part of the country or 10 miles away and you're ejaculated ice. Nobody wears pants.
Nobody.
You
don't need them.
Butts hanging out all over the place.
Yeah, it's Skivvy Central.
No shirts, maybe a vest. Like even the emissaries in the robes. Once they kind of like started attacking people at the fire keep, they took off the robes and it's just underpants. That's all they've got under the robes.
They got up out of bed and just threw a robe on to go do their errand.
And no one in this entire movie just has anything more than the barest. I don't know, protection against the elements.
This is probably a good point to say that this whole thing is very, very Conan the Barbarian influenced. Because, you know, Frank Frazetta did, you know, he was a producer. He did a lot of the art and was responsible for a lot of the art. And Frazetta did all of the best, like, Conan art, too. So I think this was Frazetta's, like, attempt to, like, do his own, like, little mythos, Conan mythos, and it's very barbarian driven, strong, muscular dudes, scantily clad women. Yeah, I mean, it had all the hallmarks of the Robert E. Howard
stories. It's definitely like the 1930s sword and sorcery sort of stuff. I mean, this is right out of like Weird Tales or some shit. It's
Did you notice the first time they really show off Tigra's breasts that it is just 100% obvious that they're fake? Like, even in our cartoon, she has fake tits. Like, the shape, the nipples are way too high up for whatever's going on. Like, they're 100% a tit job.
They bounced pretty realistically the first time she escaped, though.
No, that's true, but just the whole placement, it's like, whoever drew it is like, we're doing, like, it's in that old style of like.
Yeah, but Mike, I think you gotta keep this in the context of, like, if you look at any illustrations of fantasy stuff like that from like the 70s or 80s, they pretty much all look like that.
Big perky boobs.
Nipples on their shoulder blades and like then and then the flesh bags hanging below.
It's just every part of the body kind of has like a unrealistic, over-exaggerated look.
Yeah. It was just, I was just really confused about the nipple placement. That's all it was mostly, that was the thing.
Well, again, I think that's Frazetta's influence. Any of his art is super
which
stylized
is, I mean,
like that.
His art is amazing, but you know, he did all the Conan stuff, the Death Dealer stuff, like, I mean, extremely, extremely heavily influenced this movie. So, I mean, my opinion, just overview, is like, if you like Conan, you like that era of writing, and you like Frazetta's stuff, you're probably gonna like this movie.
Oh yeah.
Little quick take, is that your little quick take there?
Quick takes.
That's my quick take. I mean, it's a pretty simple movie, so there's maybe that's the long and the short of it, but yeah, if you like this, if you like Howard, you're probably gonna like this.
Yeah, very, very simple movie. I mean, like, the first half of the movie is just like our hero, Lorne was his name, and the princess Lorne and the princess, Tigra, just running from different groups of subhumans until they meet in some ruins, have a little tomfoolery going on, and then the princess is captured again. It's like a chase movie through a jungle and some ruins for like a good, 40 minutes or so?
Yeah.
It's like every time someone gets knocked out or falls asleep, when they wake up, something's right there in their face again.
Yeah.
I did appreciate the use of a couple monsters, you know, like the Kraken was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the tomfoolery that happened.
Yeah, the tomfoolery with the Kraken. But, you know, I could have used more monsters, I think. I mean, the little subhuman thing with them always chasing him. I mean, it got a little repetitive, I'll admit.
Oh, yeah, they were called dogs, remember? They kept referring to them as dogs. But there were some cool dogs in it, but that's not when they said the Ice Lord's Necron's dogs, they were not talking about the dogs.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm just bringing back into that terrible racism that was happening throughout this movie.
They were here. Necron's dogs. They got the girl.
Which also exists in the literature of that time, too.
Yeah.
Sure.
The literature of Howard in the 30s.
It's a very faithful recreation of 1930s views on fantasy and race.
You really got to look at this sort of stuff through the prism of history. You got to look at racism and nipple placement through the prism of history.
Through the prism of the early 1980s.
That's exactly what happened when I was watching 12 Years a Slave. You know, nipple placement, history, that whole thing.
Yeah. Really, totally.
So speaking of nipple placement, what did you guys think of the animation style? I mean, this is like Bakshi's, like, this is his rotoscoping was like his thing. Like everything I've seen him do is like this.
I don't remember Lord of the Rings that well, so I haven't seen a movie in this style in a long time, but I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I thought, apart from the occasional, like, weirdness of it that would occasionally happen, I thought it was really cool and interesting. A lot of the time when the animation was supposed to be fast, it looked kind of sketchy around the character moving and stuff like that, and I thought that added a little level to it. But what really blew my mind, like, I think I shouted out loud when I was Wikipediaing this while watching, a lot of the background art was done by Thomas Kincaid.
Yeah.
Which is blows my mind, because I can't imagine he would be okay with that much ass and, like, stuff, because he is God's gift to the Protestants.
Yeah, Thomas Kincaid, in case any of you B-movie maniacs out there are not aware, he's the artist who paints every painting that is hanging in all of your friends' mom's living rooms, basically.
Yeah, every person who goes to, like, yeah, like a Protestant church adores him, but every art critic hates him.
And it's weird because it didn't come across as what you would consider to be his style when you see his painting.
Well, his style is generally classified as, like, slightly surreal pastels, and it's like cottage. It's always a cottage in a forest.
Yeah.
And then like a cross somewhere.
Well, he had to move on from jungles and ice.
Yeah, maybe this is what snapped him. He's like, it's such a dark thing with all these mushrooms and creepiness that he's just like, I need the light of the Lord to come in and shine upon my canvas. And so,
should we post some Thomas Kincaid painting examples underneath for people to compare and contrast?
I mean, I'm not even that familiar.
Yeah, not to add to the Photoshop work, but why don't we do a side-by-side comparison?
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Here's some asses hanging out. Here's some religious...
I'm that in the background, artwork. But sure.
So speaking of the behind-the-scenes stuff, the writers, Jerry Conway and Roy Thomas, they both wrote the original story treatment for Conan the Destroyer. I mean, their story ultimately wasn't used. They didn't write the final script, but I guess they had the first pass at that.
So it seems like there's some people involved who are kind of within this sort of Conan type universe.
And they wrote like the early Conan comic books for Marvel. So they were really sword and sorcery. Until, Jerry Conway also created the Punisher, apparently, the Marvel comic character. He was getting his own Netflix show soon, so...
Now, didn't you say, Chris, off the recording beforehand, didn't you say that there was some talk of Robert Rodriguez trying to get a live-action version of this movie made?
Yeah. As of, I think, a couple of years ago. This is 2016 for all you listeners from the future.
He confirmed it last year.
Oh, did he confirm it last year?
At South by Southwest 2015, he confirmed it. That he was doing it. Sony has the rights, and at least as in that much recent, so it's been about a year and a half, maybe, since this interview that I just watched before we recorded, he said that he is working on it. It is his movie, which could be great.
I'd be down with that. I'm all right with it. I just really hope he keeps with the costume design.
You know, it's Rodriguez. I honestly believe he'd probably try.
You know, it's weird. Actually, I was looking for something, and I randomly came across an Entertainment Weekly photo of some of the concept art that he had started putting together. And it does look very, very similar.
Nice.
I hope he gets the panther-headed warrior right.
Oh, you mean Bat Leopard?
Dark Wolf.
Bat Leopard.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Dark Wolf yet.
Dark Wolf was voiced by Steven Sander. Now, if you know your Game of Thrones, Sander Clegane is the Hound, So that's another connection between the two.
Wow.
If you're going to kill the Ice Lord, boy, you better learn to live with pain.
Martin totally ripped off Fire and Ice.
Totally ripped this off.
Yeah.
Well, that explains how badass Bat Leopard is, because he's fucking cool as hell. He's got his axe, and he's, like, doing cool shit.
He's clearly supposed to be Conan, right? Like,
yeah, oh, he, clearly. Yeah, definitely. I mean, he doesn't do anything except kick everyone's ass.
And, okay, I'm trying to remember. Like, they introduced him, and didn't he just kind of say, hey, I'm against Necron, and, like, that's it? And then he got be the one to go into the main fight? Like, it was sort of weird.
Well, he's a god or something. They stumbled upon his temple, and there was a giant monument with his head on.
What?
I assume, unless there's...
I completely missed that.
I missed that, too.
It's fucking Blondie runs away. Is running away, and he's walking through the jungle, and he clears some vines out of the way, and it's like Indiana Jones style. He clears the vines, and behind the vines is this giant head, and it looks like Bat Leopard. Like, he's got the hat and everything on. Now, maybe it's a whole race of people that wear the same outfits or something like that, but at no point is that explained.
It's a hereditary title. I name Bat Leopard. Dark Wolf the 13th.
Yeah, well, during the tomfoolery scene you mentioned, Chris, like, that's the point. They're like what looks like Mayan ruins at that point.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's that place where there's a giant head monument of this guy, Bat Leopard.
Which I also, what was one thing I appreciated about the art and the design of the movie was that held true to the writing style, is that, you know, it's this ancient feeling place, but they also give you the impression that there's even more ancient stuff. There's even older stuff that you don't... It just... There's a lot of mystery to just, like, the design of the surroundings, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, they hinted a lot, but I think the world building as a whole is a complete failure in that specifically 80s sort of way. I mean, this whole movie felt like it fit the, like, 1930s Conan, Robert E. Howard sword and sorcery style, but I think the storytelling just glossed over so much.
Yeah, like they
missed, I agree with that.
They missed the whole backstory of Blondie about how he can fall from any height possible and still live. Like, does he have Antimanian, like, skeleton? Like, he jumps out of that fucking forest on a cliff, falls to the ground, fine. At some point, Bat Leopard kicks him off of a rock, it's like, get out of here, and he falls down on the ground. He's fine. Everything, he keeps getting, like, thrown and kicked and falling and jumping onto the ground, and he's always fine.
He's got to be the toughest hero in any movie ever.
But he's also worthless. He's such a worthless protagonist.
Fucking Dark Wolf saves his ass so many times.
Princess. And he didn't really have a piece of the action in the end.
Well,
you know?
He did. Tim and Tigra. Fucking. Wow.
Well, I think their bond was forged in the tomfoolery scene before he fought the Kraken. And then at the end, like, he and Tigra are like, let's just make, all right, lava destroyed everything. Let's just make out. Fade to black. Mm-hmm.
Let's let Dark Wolf take care of this.
I kind of wonder if, to speak to your point, Chris, about there not being enough world building. Number one, it was very short. It was only like an hour and 20 minutes. But I also wonder if maybe they were hoping to expand upon some things with a couple sequels down the line.
Yeah, I think this was before that sort of sequelitis was really a thing. I mean... Right. Everything, like, movies of that time, I think Star Wars started with the, hey, sequels are just as popular, if not more popular, than the original. I don't think Frazetta and Bakshi went into this thinking this would be a franchise.
Okay, and so they just did a poor job, then.
Yeah, I think they just did a poor job. I hate to say it, but I have a childhood attachment to Bakshi's Lord of the Rings, but everything else I've seen Wizards, I've seen this, and I've seen, what, Cool World or something, and I've been disappointed by everything.
Yeah. I looked him up just to see what else he had done, and I did notice that the only other thing, or the next thing that he did after Fire and Ice was Cool World, like 9 years later or something.
Yeah. I mean, he's got this amazing legacy, and he really, at the time, like, cartoons, animation was just purely for kids. I can't think of any adult. I mean, this was before the anime boom, about 10 years later, when it started catching on in America. And there was no animation for adults then.
Right.
And he really kind of kept that alive. But
yeah,
other than
that, Fritz the Cat was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
With his, that thing, that whole, like, animated smut, if you will. Like, Yeah, it's an adult cartoon.
Yeah, and it might be an unpopular opinion because I think he's got like this cult following, but I've been disappointed by everything, honestly.
I wasn't that disappointed with this.
Yeah, I mean, this was entertaining. I enjoyed it, but I just wish, you know, you look at the state of film today with CGI, and you can do anything you want to do. Like, you can make the most epic battles, anything your imagination can handle. And animation was that in sort of the 80s, as long as you had a bit of a budget, I guess. And they just did not do as much as I think they could have.
That's true. And I also would say that, like, probably the story wasn't constructed as tightly as it could have been. Because, I mean, like I said, the main guy, Larn, doesn't really do that much, you know? Like, they kind of insert Darkwolf in there in the end to kind of take care of things.
Yeah.
It was kind of a weird way to resolve the movie.
Well, speaking of inserting, remember that time for about 30 seconds there was some sort of a forest witch?
Yes. Yes. Then, I thought that was going to be a whole thing.
I thought so too. Like, a forest witch comes in. She's got the girl. Oh, it finds out that the girl, she like makes out with her for a second.
Really?
Right? She nibbles on her ear. It's weird.
Instantly falls in love.
Yeah.
And then she does some magic.
Finds out that Necron needs her. So she goes to blackmail or bribe him or whatever the fuck she wants to do. And then his guys kill her. And so,
very simply.
So I was like, I assumed like, oh, I guess you're going to come back later, right? She's a witch. She'll come back and do something. No, she just dies and then comes back as a skeleton for 5 seconds right after, not later in the movie, but instantly right then. And like talks to Leo or whatever his fucking name is. And, Larn. You know, and then Larn dies, like double dies.
Also, speaking of inserting, I have to echo Chris's sentiment that I was a little disappointed by this movie and was kind of worried because I really wasn't quite sure what I was going to really be able to talk about on this episode. And it worried me to the point where I just felt like I was left with no choice. So I went ahead and wrote some fire and ice erotic fan fiction.
Yes!
And,
yes!
Fantastic.
And I thought maybe you guys might, like to hear it.
Yeah, let's hear it,
please. I'm going to settle in.
Yeah, my pants are off right now.
Okay.
I'm wearing as much as they did in the movie.
My pants are off as well, so if you'll indulge me for a moment, this is something I wrote called Fire in the Night. The massive front gate of Firekeep slowly creaked open. Through the entrance walked Larn, clutching his arm and walking with a slight limp. Inside his quarters, Larn gingerly sat down on his bed and began inspecting his wounds. From the corner of his eye, he spotted two glowing green eyes staring at him through the darkness. Larn leapt into a defensive position, grabbing a knife from his bedside. He trained his focus on the open window. The glowing eyes were still there. Larn heard the mysterious figure chuckle. From the shadows emerged Darkwolf, smiling at Larn. "You must keep your window shut, my friend," he said. "Many dangers outside." "And I just ran into several of them," Larn fired back. "Subhumans?" Larn nodded. "Some of them are trying to form a new army and take the castle. We will stop them together," Darkwolf said to Larn. "Allow me to look at you." Larn was startled by the request, but then remembered his wounds. Darkwolf approached slowly. He gently grabbed Larn by the arm and inspected his sweaty, dirty body. "One of them got a good swipe at my arm, but that's all," Larn said. Darkwolf reached into a pouch around his waist and applied a bandage to Larn's arm. There was a stillness in the air. "Princess Tigra? Gone until tomorrow evening. A diplomatic mission. Her father is finally letting her negotiate some of..." Larn stopped speaking as Darkwolf placed one of his rugged hands on Larn's bare, swollen chest. Darkwolf looked at him and smiled. "Good," he said. "Darkwolf, no," Larn said. "We cannot do this again. Last time was a mistake. If King Jarl were to find..." Larn's words were cut short again. but this time because of Dark Wolf's chapped lips pressing firmly against his. He kissed back passionately, thrusting his tongue past Dark Wolf's lips and into his eager mouth. Dark Wolf grasped firmly at Larn's bulging muscles. His large hands made his way down to Larn's loincloth as their mouths continued to mash. Dark Wolf tugged a few times at the strings holding the cloth together. It dropped to the floor as Larn let out a moan, his manhood now unencumbered by the burlap garment.
It's long.
And you're listening to all of it.
Oh, please, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted that to be subtext under you talking.
Suddenly consumed with lust, Larn grabbed Dark Wolf by the shoulders and spun him around. Larn guided his member in between Dark Wolf's thighs, allowing his hardness to brush against the warrior's dark, furry bottom. Both men breathed heavily, their impassioned sounds penetrating the night air. Larn teased for a moment more, then pushed on Dark Wolf's firm backside, sending him plopping onto the bed. The green-eyed brute turned around and laughed. Larn sunk his hands into the sides of Dark Wolf's furry garment and pulled down, exposing the impressive weapon between his secret lover's legs. Dark Wolf glared at Larn intently. He grabbed himself, pointing his large skin club towards the evening sky. Larn moved onto the edge of the bed, slinking towards Dark Wolf on all fours, slowly approaching his intended target. He kept his eyes locked on him until Dark Wolf's hardened flesh was mere inches from his face. Then, in an instant, he opened his mouth and plunged the warrior's warm member deep into his throat. Dark Wolf practically yelled in ecstasy as Larn began to vigorously slurp. He used his hands, dirty as they were, to cuff and caress his parts, doing his best to bring pleasure to the man who had saved his life. Larn felt Dark Wolf pulsate inside his mouth, and he knew what was coming soon.
Bleachers?
His trained ears, however, began to hear sounds of movement from outside his quarters. God, Dark Wolf's going. Throaty moans must have traveled farther than anticipated. His mind racing, Larn decided he could not leave his friend and lover unsatisfied. He clamped down with more force, furiously bobbing his head up and down as Dark Wolf grabbed onto Larn's luscious blonde locks. Larn felt the eruption of hot man fire in his mouth as Dark Wolf moaned out in complete delight. The sounds outside grew louder and louder. Larn pulled himself off Dark Wolf's sloppy, wet flesh axe, then quickly swallowed the almost overwhelming amount of hot love juice.
God damn it!
Dark Wolf writhed from the bed, but stumbled, drunk on pleasure and still very much rock hard. He embraced Larn and kissed him as someone began knocking on the door. Larn grabbed a bedsheet and wrapped it around himself. He looked behind him. The window was closed. As quickly as he had come, Dark Wolf was gone. Larn moved to the door and cracked it open, being careful to hide his engorged man meat as much as possible. Two guards greeted him on the other side of the door. "Larn," one of them said, "we heard strange noises. Are you all right?" "I'm fine," Larn replied to the guards. "I'm perfectly fine. You must have heard the wind, my fine men." "Very well," said the other guard. "What is it?" Larn questioned. "You've a bit of, well, juice on your face, sir." "Ah, thank you, guard." Larn licked the warm juice dripping from his lip and smiled as he closed the door. The end.
Wow.
Sorry, that was long.
Well, not only does that perfectly describe my Monday, that's as good a way to wrap this up as any.
Hot lava.
Guys, it's time for my new mini podcast, What Erotica Did We Just Listen To? Hi, welcome for joining me on the next Erotica Movie Mania. I'm Mike Hayes. With me, as always, is Jason Halls.
Huh? Is this Hudson, a podcast within a podcast?
And Paul Brooks. We just listened to Paul Brooks tell us a story of a love that's foreboding. Let's talk about it. Now, I feel like the cum on his lips would have been cold at this point. And so that's all I'm thinking. I thought it was great. Just that was unbelievable at the end, I thought.
Sorry about it.
Rating time.
I think it's time for a little review here. Let's rate these. Mike, how many barely covered butts would you give to both the movie and to Paul's erotic fan fiction?
Oh, boy. Are we counting two cheeks as one or separate cheeks?
Let's go separate cheeks.
Separate cheeks?
So it can be an odd number.
It can be an odd number.
So it can
some
be,
of those subhumans. Whew.
All right. I've certainly seen worse things. So, like, and I enjoyed some of it. You know, I unenjoyed some of it. It was kind of boring, I thought. But in the end, you know, there's a bunch of toilet trolls that are down way deeper than this. So I'm going to give it, I'll give it 50 bare butt cheeks.
50 like, bare butt cheeks. And how many bare butt cheeks would you give Paul's fan fiction?
130.
Wow. Breaking the scale. Jay?
I'm a fan of Howard's work. I like sword and sorcery stuff. So, I'll agree there was some parts that lagged a little bit. Maybe story weirdness in there. I'm going to go 69 barely covered butt cheeks.
Wow, sensual.
Yeah.
Does that go for both the movie and Paul's fan fiction?
No. Paul's erotic fan fiction, the storytelling was gripping. I'm going to go 131.
Oh,
wow. You really enjoyed. Wow.
It's like The Price is Right.
Thank you much.
Paul Brooks, how many barely covered butts would you rate the movie?
Well, the problem with this thing, you know, we watch a lot of bad movies, but the problem with this was that it just was kind of in that weird middle ground where it wasn't bad enough to be funnier or really all that enjoyable, but it certainly wasn't good enough. So I'm going to go 39 barely covered butt cheeks. And for my erotic fan fiction,
this is what I really want to know.
I don't want to toot my own horn or anything here, but I got to go 132 barely covered
God
butt cheeks.
I actually think that if you do a sequel to your erotic Fire and Ice fan fiction, Larn definitely needs to toot his own horn.
Well, and was Tigra really away on a diplomatic mission, or maybe she was meeting up with Juliana?
Questions to be answered.
I'd like Tigra to be meeting up with the skeleton corpse of that forest witch.
What if every single episode from here on out of B-Movie Mania, regardless of the movie, at the end there's Fire and Ice fan erotic fan fiction?
Why don't we ask our listeners what they think of that?
And listeners, yeah. Please feel free to add your own.
Yes, please tweet at us at B-Movie Mania with your own Fire and Ice erotic fan fiction.
I'd even say if someone writes some decent erotic fan fiction for any movie we're doing, if you get it in ahead of time or whatever, we'll just fucking read it, too.
Yeah, that should just be a rule. Any movie we do, erotic fanfic, lay it on us.
The longer, the better. 30 pages.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I can't wait for some incredible bulk fan fiction.
Oh, God.
I would love a mini episode, midweek episode, to just be us having to read erotic fan fiction.
Just think about the crossovers. Amazing Bulk versus Peaceway.
Oh, my God. Please, that would morph into the main podcast, is what that would do.
It would. It definitely would.
Good God. Chris.
Well, I'm a fan of Robert E. Howard and the Conan stories I've read. I mean, Conan the Barbarian is one of my favorite movies. Not so much Conan the Destroyer, but this was, I don't know, I enjoyed it for the most part. I thought it was slow, a little repetitive for the first hour or so.
It's only an hour and 20 minutes long.
Hey, those 20 minutes were halfway decent, all right?
Oh, so,
I'm gonna give it 60 barely covered butts.
60.
60. Mm-hmm. And Paul's erotic fan fiction, I'm gonna give it a double 69
barely covered butts. What's that come up to?
6,969.
Oh,
wow.
Is that how math works?
Dang, thank you.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck.
on the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
Let me see if I can read all of this without laughing. Here we go. The Tough Titty is a strip club that's seen better days. Spider has been losing money on his business for years. Now it's finally getting the traffic he's always wanted. Unfortunately, most of his patrons are undead and growing quickly. Full Moon Entertainment presents Zombie Decadence.
Zombie Decadence? Where do we find that at?
It is available on Hulu. The original title for it was Zombies versus Strippers.
I thought so. I knew.
I've seen that.
God damn it.
But then Full Moon changed it to Zombie Decadence.
Fuck.
Because they wanted to confuse you with Decadent Evil.
Is that a movie too?
Oh yeah.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydy? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out! Touch them! They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Mike, just make a bunch of weird noises.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for listening to Mike on B-Movie Mania. See you next time.
Woo! Zombies.
Full Moon Entertainment.
Fuck you, Paul. That movie's awful.
All right, I'm hitting the stop.
Winter is coming.